The Baudelaire orphans looked worriedly out the window. They weren't very happy about just being dropped off in a strange place, as if they were a pizza being delivered instead of three children all alone in the world. "What if Count Olaf shows up?" Klaus asked quietly. "He swore he'd find us again."
"I have given Mr. Beck, Mr. Dwee, I have given your new caretaker a complete description of Count Olaf," said Mr. Poe. "So if by some stretch of the imagination he shows up in Paltryville, Mr. Gick will notify the authorities."
"But Count Olaf is always in disguise," Violet pointed out. "It's often difficult to recognize him. Just about the only way you can tell it's him is if you see that tattoo of an eye that he has on his ankle."
"I included the tattoo in my description," Mr. Poe said impatiently.
"But what about Count Olaf's assistants?" Klaus asked. "He usually brings at least one of them with him to help out with his treachery."
"I described all of them to Mr. I have described all of them to the owner of the mill," Mr. Poe said, holding a finger up as he counted off Olaf's horrible associates. "The hook-handed man, the bald man with the long nose, the two women with white powder all over their faces, and that rather chubby one who looks like neither a man nor a woman. Your new guardian is aware of them all, and if there's any problem, remember you can always contact me or any of my associates at Mulctuary Money Management."
"Casca," Sonny said glumly. She probably meant something like, "That's not very reassuring." But nobody heard her over the sound of the train whistle as they arrived at Paltryville Station.
"Here we are," Mr. Poe said, and before the children knew it, they were standing in the station, watching the train pull away into the dark trees of the finite forest.
The clattering noise of the train engine got softer and softer as the train raced out of sight, and soon the three siblings were all alone indeed. "Well," Violet said, picking up a small bag that contained the children's few clothes, "let's find the Lucky Smills lumber mill. Then we can meet our new caretaker." "Or at least learn his name," Klaus said glumly, and took Sunny's hand. If you are ever planning a vacation, you may find it useful to acquire a guidebook, which is a book listing interesting and pleasant places to visit, and giving helpful hints about what to do when you arrive. Paltryville is not listed in any guidebook. And as the Baudelaire orphans trudged down Paltryville's one street, they instantly saw why. There were a few small shops on either side of the street, but none of them had any windows. There was a post office, but instead of a flag flying from the flagpole, there was only an old shoe dangling from the top of it. And across from the post office was a high wooden wall that ran all the way to the end of the street. In the middle of the wall was a tall gate, also made of wood, with the words "Lucky Smells Lumber Mill" written on it in letters that looked rough and slimy. Alongside the sidewalk, where a row of trees might have been, were towering stacks of old newspapers instead. In short, everything that might make a town interesting or pleasant had been made boring or unpleasant, and if Paltryville had been listed in a guidebook, the only helpful hint about what to do when you got there would be, leave. But the three youngsters couldn't leave, of course, and with a sigh, Violet led her younger siblings to the wooden gate. She was about to knock when Klaus touched her on the shoulder and said, "Look." "I know," she said. Violet thought he was talking about the letter spelling out "Lucky Smells Lumber Mill." Now that they were standing at the gate, the children could see why the letters looked rough and slimy. They were made out of wads and wads of chewed-up gum, just stuck on the gate in the shapes of letters. Other than a sign I saw once that said "Beware" in letters made of dead monkeys, the "Lucky Smells Lumber Mill" sign was the most disgusting sign on earth, and Violet thought her brother was pointing that out. But when she turned to agree with him, she saw he wasn't looking at the sign, but down to the far end of the street. "Look," Klaus said again, but Violet had already seen what he was looking at. The two of them stood there without speaking a word, staring hard at the building at the end of Paltryville's one street. Sunny had been examining some of the teeth marks on the gum, but when her siblings fell silent, she looked up and saw it too. For a few seconds, the Baudelaire orphans just looked. "It must be a coincidence," Violet said, after a long pause. "Of course," Klaus said nervously. "A coincidence." "Varney," Sunny agreed, but she didn't believe it. None of the orphans did. Now that the children had reached the mill, they could see another building at the far end of the street. Like the other buildings in town, it had no windows, just a round door in the center. But it was the way the building was shaped and how it was painted that made the Baudelaires stare. The building was a sort of oval shape, with curved, skinny sticks sticking out at the top of it. Most of the oval was painted a brownish color, with a big circle of white inside the oval and a smaller circle of green inside the white circle, and some little black steps led to a little round door that was painted black, so it looked like an even smaller circle inside the green one. The building had been made to look like an eye. The three children looked at one another, and then at the building, and then at each other again, shaking their heads. Try as they might, they just couldn't believe it was a coincidence that the town in which they were to live had a building that looked just like the tattoo of Count Olaf.
在线英语听力士，感谢您的收听，请推荐给身边的好友。